honored and pleased to be at your most respected institution. And I want to thank all of you for kindly giving us this precious opportunity to be with you today. I was asked to speak on the subject of self-management. In terms of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains to the world the most profound and essential system of management. How to manage our mind, our senses, in harmony with the true nature and purpose of the soul, of God, and of life. Our Guru Maharaj used to say that the educational institutions today are giving so much knowledge, so much education. But he said, as far as he was concerned, and as far as all the great acharyas are concerned, everything you learn in all of your colleges and universities are like so many zeros. If you get BA, MA, PhD, you're just adding up your zeros. And if you have 100,000 zeros and put them all together, what do you get? One great big zero. Zero means nothing. Zero means a useless waste of human life. At the time of death, you cannot take anything with you. But if you put a one in front of those zeros, however many zeros follow, increase the quality of your life and what you can do for the world. And that one is knowledge of the self, knowledge of God, knowledge of the purpose of life. Then whatever education we utilize for that purpose only increases the integrity and the value of our life and what we can do for human society. It is the most drastic misfortune in all of creation that throughout the world, practically all the educational institutions are teaching people how to manage so many facilities of this world. People are learning biology, chemistry, engineering, psychology, psychiatry, computer technology, but no educational system practically is teaching the virtues of a human being, what is the soul, what is God, and what is the meaning of life. Therefore, so many zeros. In the Bhagavad Gita, we find Arjuna. He went to an educational institution. Do you know Mahabharata, some of you? He went to the educational institution of Dronacharya. And there he learned the science of military and political management. How to mobilize forces and armies, how to fight with the bow, how to fight with the club, how to organize political systems within the government. Duryodhana went to that same institution. They both went to the same college with the same professor. Arjuna heard the Bhagavad Gita. He understood the truth and the purpose of life. And therefore, everything he learned, he used in the service of God. He used in the pursuance of establishing Dharma in this world. Duryodhana took the same education, and he used it simply to satisfy his own greed, his own exploitative, selfish motives. And what was the result? Arjuna established Dharma within the world and achieved the enlightened state of transcendental realization and bliss. Duryodhana made a mess of his life, a mess of the world, and died a cruel death with nothing but regret. So I'm very much impressed and grateful for the principles that this Maharashtra Institute of Technology is based upon. Based upon learning the knowledge of this world and applying it to the principles of real religion and dharma. teaching young people how to have good character, how to manage their mind and senses in such a way that they can do real good for this world, which is so full of suffering and confusion. Education is the greatest power in the world. And if power is in the good hands, it can give the greatest benefits. But when power is in the wrong hands, it creates the most terrible destruction. Just a few minutes ago, we were having a wonderful discussion with your respected dean of students, and he mentioned Einstein, who was a great scientist, together with other big education academic scholars. They discovered atomic energy. Their idea, because basically they were religious people who believed in God, their idea was that they would take their discoveries and their investigations into the subtler and subtler aspects of nature and use it for the benefit and welfare of humanity. But what happened? It came into the wrong hands. It came into the hands of other great scientists, of other big PhDs, MAs, politicians. And they used that knowledge to create devices of mass destruction and misery. Bombs. The problems in this world are not caused by the simple peasants who are in their farms and villages. The problems in the world, the real problems, are being caused by the people in the highest brackets of education and scholarship. They are the ones polluting the air, polluting the water, polluting the earth, polluting the mines, creating so many needless facilities simply to try to entertain their bored and frustrated lives. What is the solution? If you are not a part of the solution, you are simply a part of the problem. The solution is we have forgotten our own nature, our own spiritual substance, and how to live in harmony with that. And the solution is given by Krishna in the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. That is self-management. Yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam astaram. Krishna says in Gita that the mind can be your best friend or can be your worst enemy. When the mind is simply attached to trying to fulfill the temporary cravings of your senses, your mind is your worst enemy. The purpose of your existence will be spoiled. But if you can control your mind, if you can discipline your mind and use that to discipline your senses, to live in harmony with truth, according to real morality, and be exemplary as a servant of God, then your mind is your best friend. And this is the most important thing to understand. I have no doubt that all of you will get very good marks and will get your degrees. But my concern is simply this: what will you do for your lives, for your families, and for human society? What is the purpose of life? This is what Bhagavad Gita deals with. Our Guru Maharaj used to say that the dog is running on four legs, and with all of your advanced technology, you are running on four wheels. But what is the difference between you and the dog? Nothing. Just running from one place to another to satisfy the demands of the mind and senses. The hog is sleeping in the gutter, and we are sleeping in nice beds in beautiful houses. But what is the difference? The quality of our consciousness is simply to sleep. The hog is eating stool and we are eating nice fine foods. The quality of the consciousness is the same, simply to eat. The dogs and the hogs are also having their wives and husbands and creating offspring and protecting them. And we also have our families. And we also go out and work to maintain them. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Until we understand that human life is meant to inquire into the truth, human life is meant to realize who we are and what is our relationship with God, all of our technology is simply sophisticated animalism and nothing more. There's no higher purpose in life than the lower species. Who are we? This is the first principle taught by Krishna in Gita, the first principle taught in the Vedanta Sutra. Janmadyashayata atato brahma jigyasa. Krishna explains that this body is like a temporary place of residence. The body goes through various transformations from boyhood to youth to old age. But who is it that is witnessing and experience life throughout our bodily existence? Who are we? At the time of death, the body is still there. But who and where are we? The difference between life and death is consciousness. And that consciousness is the symptom of the presence of the Atma, or the soul. When we live according to the needs of the soul, that is real human life. When we live simply according to the needs of the body, that is of the same caliber as the lower species. Krishna explains the science of the nature of the soul in Gita. The soul is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, Satchit Ananda. The soul is part of God. The soul has godly attributes. The nature of the consciousness within us is pure compassion, pure love, pure mercy, pure selfless willing to give for the benefit of others, pure love of God, and pure love for all of God's creation. That is your nature. That is the essence and source of your life. But we have forgotten that. We have tossed away the most beautiful, valuable, precious diamond to chase after the broken pieces of glass in the forms of the pleasures and the purposes of this world. To come again in that consciousness of our true self is self-management in its purest, highest, and most essential state. It is explained that when water in the form of rain falls from the clouds, initially it is pure, like distilled water. But when it comes in contact with the earth, it becomes full of mud, becomes polluted. We were just speaking about how this wonderful university is developing a project in Alandi, and they're making a filtration plant to purify the water of the Indriani River, because so many pollutants are put in it. The water originally is pure. What is filtering? Filtering simply means bringing the water to its natural state and taking out all the things that everyone else is putting in. In the same way that we try to purify the water to give health to man, we must learn how to filter our consciousness and bring it back to its original pure state. And then, whether you are an engineer, whether you are a doctor, whether you are a business manager, whether you are a housewife or a student, whether you are an architect, a farmer, a teacher, or a swami, whatever you may be, if you do it in this pure state of consciousness, then you will perform your work not out of greed, like Duryodhana, not with a desire to exploit, not based on the foundation of ignorance, but you can perform your duties in this world. You could use the wonderful education you are receiving in a spirit of compassion, of mercy, of love, we can use it as an expression of our own ecstatic relationship with the Supreme. And this is what every great religious teacher has taught. Religion is not just a belief system. Religion is the most important science in all the world. Our spiritual master used to say that religion without science and philosophy is either sentimentalism or fanaticism. And science and philosophy without religion is simply dangerous speculation. The marriage of the two is required within society. We see how the Hindus and the Muslims are fighting and killing each other. That has nothing to do with Hinduism, and it has nothing to do with Islam. It has to do with a belief system which has no scientific, philosophical basis in these people's minds. And they're just using their belief system as an extension of their own egos. And this is going on all over the world, and it has gone on throughout history, between the Buddhists and the Hindus, between the Sikhs and the Hindus, between the Christians and the other sects of Christianity, the Jews and the Christians. Is this religion? I was speaking at one university, and one student raised their hand and says, there is so much conflict between the religions, so much bloodshed and war, I think the best thing we can do for humanity is just get rid of religion. This is not religion. Religion or belief and faith without a philosophical scientific basis is either such fanaticism or sentimentalism. Many young students I speak to, they tell me about their parents. They perform the puja every day. And when they ask their parents, what are you doing? They're saying, puja. Well, what does it mean? What is it for? Do not ask these questions. Your mother did it, my grandmother did it, my great-grandmother did it, everyone does it, so I do it. Because if we don't do it, the gods may become angry and may make us suffer. Young people educated in science and philosophy, they cannot accept such a concept of religious life. Sentimentalism and fanaticism will not help us, nor will it help the world. But at the same time, science and philosophy, even if we study the scriptures very, very deeply, even if we analyze the various branches of science very systematically, if it does not change the quality of the actions and the thoughts of our life, it is all a waste of time. Bhagavad Gita and the other great spiritual books of this world is a theory that is meant to put into practice. Religion is a way of life. Just like you're going to university. You don't go to university just to stay in the university for the rest of your life. You go to the university to absorb, to imbibe, to collect as much good things so that you can take it out into the world and use it for a higher purpose and to help others to develop a higher purpose. So similarly, the textbooks of religions, the temples and the ashrams, they are meant to educate people in the highest science of the soul, the science of your life, the science of your relationship with nature and God. And then we must take that and utilize it according to whatever particular occupation we may have the proclivity to perform in our life. But we must act in knowledge. This is the greatest need in society. And who is it that is going to either pollute this world even worse than it is, or save this world? It is you. It is the youth of the world. The people in the colleges today are the future leaders of human society. Krishna says in Gita, Yad yad acharati sreshtas tad tad evetarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastharanubhartate. What the leaders do, the common people will follow. And every aspect of society, the leaders of tomorrow are in the colleges and universities today. If there is a real upliftment of the integrity and character of the students today, an understanding of truth and how to live in harmony with truth, you can change the world. Do not think that your influence cannot make a major difference on this whole planet. We were hearing about the Sant Gyaneshwar, Tukaram, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya, our own Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami. These people, they were one man. But because they had the commitment, the faith, and the willingness to be an instrument of God, they transformed millions and millions of people's lives. They transformed history. The power of God is unlimited. If we come in contact with that power of God within our own lives, through our purity, our morality, and our spirituality, we can actually make this world a holy place. We can make this world a place where people live in purity and harmony. And people can actually progress. So at the time of death, we don't simply leave this body in bewilderment. Death can come at any moment. But Krishna explains in Gita, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tijatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti konteya sadata bhava bhavata. As the soul is changing through the different ages and stages of life, at the time of death, what happens to the soul, the Atma? According to our consciousness, according to the quality of our thinking, our soul is transported to any of the 8,400,000 species of life. But if our soul is pure, or let us say, if our mind is pure, so the pure nature of the soul is not hindered or covered by illusion, then the soul is liberated from the cycle of birth and death. The soul is transferred to the eternal loving service of the Lord, to resume its original state of pure knowledge and pure bliss. So my very, very humble appeal to all of you is take advantage of the wonderful opportunity you have at this very special university. It is a university based on real principles of morality, integrity, character, and spirituality. And make a time in your life today to develop your spiritual consciousness, to filter your consciousness, bring it back to its pure state, Krishna consciousness. And then you will find the most sublime treasure. Everyone is looking for it, but it is right within your own heart. And then you can do real benefit for yourself and benefit for others. I thank you very much. And if we manage our life in this way, management of our real self, then we will actually find the greatest success, and we can give something wonderful to the world. Thank you very much. Do we have a few minutes for questions? Would anyone like to ask any questions? Why do we worship God?
My parents are also been telling me to worship God. And my youngster to me, they ask why we worship God. So I'm going to answer.
So your parents say, why don't you worship God? And the younger people say, why do you worship God?
My parents say we worship God. But I don't know why we worship God.
That is a very important question. Unless we ask this essential question of why, we will never have the conviction and faith to do it with the proper spirit. Why? Because it is our nature. It is our constitutional position. We are spiritual, as I was explaining in our discussion. Our essential identity is spiritual. People are looking for happiness. Everyone, even the little insects, when the mosquito bites you, he doesn't want to give you malaria. He wants to drink your blood, because that gives him happiness. And when you go out and see all the amazing things that people do in society today, it is all in pursuit of happiness. But what is real happiness? If before we can understand what is real pleasure, we have to understand who it is that's trying to enjoy. Just like we came here in a Maruti automobile. Now that Maruti automobile requires certain maintenance. It requires food in the form of petrol. It requires certain types of maintenance in the form of oil. So we should take care of that automobile. But what about the driver in the automobile? He has a different need. If you as the driver drink petrol and oil, what will happen to you? It will not give you pleasure. Rather, it will ruin your life. It will ruin your health. So similarly, this body and this mind have certain needs to be maintained. Food, sleep, shelter, various other facilities. But what are the needs of the soul? Human society has practically completely forgotten the needs of the soul. Therefore, however much you get, you can't be happy. Yehi samsparashaca bhoga dhuka jonaya evate. No matter what amount of pleasure you get, it ultimately brings about frustration. I'm coming from the United States of America. Why did I come to a place like India? We have nice telephone systems, the best television programs, every house, so many cars, nice smooth roads, so much development, so much wealth, but no happiness. The wealthiest people in the world, the highest brackets of income, are the most likely, this is statistics, to have psychiatrists, psychologists, and suicide. They're finding no happiness. In fact, the richer you become, the more frustrated you become. Why? Because the more you're afraid that you're going to lose, the more you have, the more insecure you are that somebody's going to take it away. There's no happiness in that. And we go to so many colleges and universities. I don't see that the PhDs and the great scholars writing so many books are any happier than the field, than the person picking rice from the field. Everyone is looking for happiness, but everyone is frustrated. And if you're not frustrated now, look around at the world and see what you will become in due course of time. Why? If you take a fish out of water and put him on the sand, whatever arrangements you make for that fish, you can make him the king, you can give him elegant jewelry, you can give him a powerful position in a society, but he'll never be happy because it is not his nature to be in the sand. The soul is spiritual. The soul is part of God. The nature of the soul is to serve God and to love God. Through all of our actions, all of our words, and all of our thoughts in this world. And that is the real pleasure, the real nourishment of the soul. So if you want real happiness based on truth, you must worship God in every act of life. And if you want to simply remain in a state of darkness, trying to be happy by satisfying this body and this mind with all these temporary material facilities, like a fish out of water, you may become famous, you may be in the front page of all the newspapers in the world, but your heart will remain empty, lonely, and frustrated. Does that answer your question? We worship God because it is truth. It is our essence. It is our nature. And forgetfulness of that nature is the root cause of all the problems in this world. And with your training and management and technology and so forth that you're learning here, if you can express your love of God through these forces, your life will be really fulfilled. It will be steeped in truth. And I think that's what everyone is looking for. Is there any other questions? Yes. Very nice question. She's asking what it means to have a pure mind and how it can be achieved in this world. The mind is like a mirror. The soul is the actual person. The conscious force, the Atma, is you. And the mind is like a mirror that you're seeing through. When the mirror is full of dirt and full of dust, what do you see when you look in the mirror? Dirt, and also dust, and everything else. You don't see yourself. You don't see who you are or what you need. You only see dirt and dust. When you clean the mirror, what do you see? You see yourself, and you see a relationship with the Supreme Self. The only thing keeping us from a realization of our own eternal, deathless nature is the dirt in our mind. And how to cleanse the dirt of the mind? This is explained by all the great scriptures, and this is explained by all the great teachers. One is stop putting any more dirt on your mind. That means live a pure life. The four, according to Srimad Bhagavat philosophy, there are four pillars of sinful activity which pollutes the mind. Illicit sex, sex outside of marriage, intoxication, taking various types of drugs or alcohol or other such substances just to infatuate the mind with unnatural condition, gambling, and causing violence to others. That means also eating meat, fish, or eggs, which is violence. So if we refrain from these four irreligious activities, then we are not throwing so much dirt on our mind. To cleanse the mirror, there is a simple formula. Hadarnama, hadarnama, hadarnama eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatiranyata. To chant the name of God. The name of God is a spiritual sound vibration. It is a pure sound vibration. By chanting the name of God, Lord Chaitanya explained, Cheto Dharapana Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam Sreya Kairava Chandrakavataranam Vidyavadhu Jivanam Anandam Budivaradanam Pratipatam Punam Ritashvadanam Sarvatmasnaparam Puram Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. The name of God is a transcendental spiritual vibration which very quickly cleanses the mirror of our heart and of our mind and awakens the eternal blissful nature and recognition of our true self. So that is why we are called the Hare Krishna movement, because we are trying to clean the mirror of our mind by chanting the holy names of God. And there are many names of God. And all these pure, authorized names of God have the power to clean your heart if they are chanted in a proper mood of service and devotion. We chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And we have seen when our Gurudev went to the Western world in 1965. This year, 1996, is the 100th anniversary of his birth. He was born, he appeared in this world in 1896. So I'd like to tell you a little something about him for my own purification, and I think it will also be nice for all of you. When he was a young man, he was initiated into the parampara of great saintly people, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, which is teaching purely the lessons of the Gita. And he was asked by his guru to take this message all over the world. So when he was 70 years old, he had nothing. He was living in Vrindavan in a small little room. He was a great scholar. He was translating the Srimad Bhagavatam. And somehow or other, he got enough donations to print the first three volumes. And then he went and he got a free passage on a cargo ship called the Jaladuta. In the ocean, he had two heart attacks. And when he came to the Boston Harbor and later on to the New York Harbor, he was wondering, how am I ever going to get the message of Krishna into these people's hearts? They are addicted to every type of vice. And he prayed, my Lord, let me just be a puppet in your hands. Make my words penetrate their hearts. He sat under a little tree in a park in New York City. Someone gave him a little drum. And here was this 70-year-old sadhu from India in the same robes that we are wearing today, in the middle of Manhattan Island of New York City, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And people started coming, mostly people your age. They were inquisitive, mostly educated people who were looking for higher purposes in life. They understood that material advancement does not bring happiness. They were looking for something beyond. But these people, from the time of their birth, they were eating meat. Illicit sex was just the most common and acceptable type of enjoyment. Gamblers, most of these people, many of them were drug addicts, alcoholics. But just by chanting the holy name of Krishna, they gave up all these things. They became very pure, and they dedicated their lives to the service of God and humanity. That is the power of the holy name, which we have seen with our own eyes, confirming the teachings of all the great scriptures and all the great saints. So by regularly chanting God's name and living a pure and moral life, this is the process of making our heart clean. And then with that clean heart, take your education, take whatever gifts God has given you, and use it as an expression of love. Is there any other questions? And I pray that you go deeply into the most important part of education. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitramita Muktamam. The science of the soul, the science of God, is the highest. It is the king of education. Put that one first in your life. And let all else you receive, like so many zeros, give real, real value to your service to God and to the world. Thank you very much.